everyone. I am Natalie Gochner, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm so excited to be in the studio today on the left with Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and hi, listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
And on the right with Senator Dan McKay.
Hello, everybody.
I feel a good vibe today. I hope you all do. We're post-primary election
yes.
in this state. Lots to talk about.
So many interesting races.
Yeah.
What is on top of your mind, Natalie?
Well, I feel post-Super Bowl.
Like, okay, yeah, because it's sport to you. Politics is sport.
It definitely is. There's a head-to-head, you know, nature of it. But it's like this big pent-up thing that I think is cooler than the Super Bowl. You know, every primary election night, we have a nerd party at my house where I invite friends. And we actually pick the candidates we think will get the least amount of votes.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, make decisions or, you know, like reward a winner for who picked
the Shireen, were you at that party?
No, but I would come. If invited.
Next year, she's there.
That's awesome. Well, let's start with the Senate race. And this is an open seat. Of course, Senator Mitt Romney did not run for reelection. Very early, this was called for John Curtis. With Trent Staggs taking a second place, and interesting.
So the thing that stood out to me here is Brad Wilson mm-hmm. coming in at about 10%. Is mm-hmm. that right?
Mm-hmm.
So these numbers are going to change. These we're working off of early results, and certainly there'll be more information added to this. But I think this is a trend of it's just been a few times now that our Speaker of the House, you know, makes this move, and I think of it as truly one of the most powerful roles in our state,
mm-hmm.
but the amount of people that have any sense of who that person actually is, and then translating being Speaker of the House into leveraging that into another role, it just seems like it's not working.
Shireen, I think of this as he got really bad news when John Curtis, you know, decided to flip over.
Yeah,
I think without that move, he would have been a really strong competitor. So it could have, you know, been a speaker that emerged. I grew up playing tennis. In tennis, we use this term no man's land. It's the place between the net and the baseline. You never want to be. It's where the ball bounces. You can't get a stroke. I feel like that's where
he ended up.
Yeah, that's where Brad Wilson ended up. He couldn't out-moderate John Curtis, and he couldn't out-lib, you know, Trent Staggs.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Dan, you had to watch this, and Mayor
this
Staggs
is your
mayor, right?
First of all, I just laugh because every time we do something, we mention something sports-oriented, it always comes out a little bit, like, off. Natalie just said that basically the entire tennis court from the baseline to the net is no man's land. But really, no man's land is like 3 feet inside the baseline to about, like, the double.
Whatever.
Thank goodness you're here.
I know.
Yeah, thank goodness you're here. I was generalizing, Dan, but the idea is you either get up to the net or you stay in the back. You're either doing, you know, a big stroke or you're volleying.
That's right. So I'm just giving Natalie a hard time. I just remember, anyways, I couldn't get the jazz coach right. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
I think if you look at name ID, what I would say if I was any politician in the state of Utah, I would be just very afraid of John Curtis ever jumping into my race, mm-hmm. right? Doesn't matter who it is.
Just so likable.
County mayor.
Likable, like, approachable,
I think, honestly,
good campaigner.
He would give Erin Mendenhall a run for her money in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. I will just say it does not matter where he runs. He seems to have this political superpower. And if I was any candidate running and John Curtis says I'm in, I'll just probably save myself some money and enjoy my summer.
It does, you know, sort of set the path for Utah to maybe emerge as a conservative climate policy state because he has really made inroads in those policies. Shireen doesn't agree with me, but Shireen, I have watched him and he has led a conservative climate caucus. He's invited people out to his home to explain his positions. I've been there, you know, and done that.
Yes. I would say so far with a little lackluster results for me. But I agree. And what I noticed this morning, I'm a Up First listener, so I listen to the kind of news roundup from mm-hmm. NPR each morning. And it was interesting to hear them characterize this as a win for a unique brand of conservatism in Utah continuing mm-hmm. to have space. Because I do think that I feel like every listener to this episode knows that I'm deeply unrepresented by Mike Lee, and I find his presence in our Senate deeply dysfunctional, like part of the dysfunction. I think John Curtis is not like that.
Yeah.
And I do feel like it behooves us to have someone who is well-respected, who's able to work across the aisle, who is able to work on critical issues and build power there.
Yeah, Dan, is it too strong to say that John Curtis is a really approachable, likable, warm Mitt Romney? They're both smart.
I don't even think John would lean into that moniker. I think just as you look at some of those things, I think John is actually better than Mitt in a lot of ways. He's his own guy. But look at us trying to reach out to the NPR crowd. We use behooves. we're bougie.
Okay. We're bougie. You're explaining tennis. I'm using $10 words.
Let's go to CD3. This is where State Senator Mike Kennedy headed to victory. You know, this was a tough one because you had a lot of big names there. Stuart Pei, the state auditor, John Dougal, who, of course, has been on this program for so long. Case Lawrence, J.R. Byrd, mayor of Roosevelt. What do you think was the tipping point here, Dan?
Well, I think that the tipping point in this race came down to Mike Kennedy ran for U.S. Senate 6 years ago, did not succeed. He used that as an opportunity, really, and jumped into the state Senate, stayed relevant on a policy, ran difficult, worked on different issues.
But he got a lot of name ID from that initial run.
Boost. And then, it was an inevitability when he ran for Senate. And now he's running for a smaller House seat that, his area is really in the middle of it, where he's already well known. And you see him having success. And I would say that success built into, this success. And he is a very respectable person. And he's good and he's amicable. And
an MD. I like MDs in public service.
Well,
the left isn't with us here, Dan.
I'm not with you on this one. This is a person who, and you were certainly part of this as well, Dan. But when we think about the experience that trans folks are having in our state and being targeted, when we think about reducing access to care, limiting people's rights, this isn't a person I'm excited about. I do think that there are many other things that he has done that are worth acknowledging. But when I think about politicians who seem to leverage the kind of most extremist kind of corners of what's happening in their party for power, I just worry. What is this going to mean for us?
So I want to talk about John Dougal for just a second.
Let's talk about John Dougal.
Well, so John didn't even place in second or third here. But I am so proud of John for sticking with his principles. And so many politicians run for office, put up their finger, feel how the wind's blowing, and go with the wind. And he didn't do that. Yeah. And I think we need to call that out, that, he's a hero to me that he did that.
Yeah.
I sent him a note last night just acknowledging that I think he is living in a reality of what's happening with his party, and he is not afraid to talk about what he is seeing and the concerns that he has. And he is a person who is deeply principled. Mm-hmm. And I just don't think there are that many people like that anymore.
Yeah. And it will be really fun to see what he does next. And we'll have him on the program here real soon. He'll be out of his blackout time, and we'll hear from him. Okay, let's go to Blake Moore. He sailed through this.
Yeah, but we knew he was. I asked AI last week to give us the printout of what a congressperson looks like, and it's still Blake Moore.
Still Blake Moore.
He would be just fine.
Shireen, Celeste Molloy and Colby Jenkins, this one is still tight, although it looks like Celeste is going to get it. I've said this before, I do not know Celeste, but I have watched how she handles herself, even last night, because we're the day after the primary. She says things in a very genuine, authentic, approachable way. I like her as she doesn't represent me, but I like her as a representative of our state.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned last time, I do feel like it's important in our entire delegation, our senators, our representatives. I am grateful that there's a woman in that group. I think it's important for people in the state, young women in the state, girls in the state, to look and have that representation, even if it may not align with their politics or may be a person who votes against some of their interests. But it is so important to see someone in that role.
Yeah,
which is
there
why
you
I'm
go.
Also glad we have our lieutenant governor as a woman. Like, I think that those things matter.
Did you know both?
My wife shares that with you, Shireen.
Yeah.
Like, You know, I thought you were, when instead of going with her sex, I thought you were going to go with like the curly hair caucus.
Yeah,
thing,
I think but. It's important, or just hair.
Right, right. But my wife shares the same thing. She really loves the idea that there's someone that like matches her, her background experience as a woman.
Yeah.
As being part of the congressional conversation. I think that's great.
Dan, did you know both of these candidates?
I know them all. Yeah, I mean, okay. You know,
Celeste Colby.
And Colby, you know, from Southern Utah.
What will be next for him?
I hope something, because to be honest, it's tough when you. This is the one thing I love about politics is it is so binary. One has to get one way or the other. But the one thing that stinks is when you see people that are qualified, like you mentioned, John Dugal. They're very qualified. They have a great public voice. They have a great principal position.
Knowledgeable.
And now they're not going to be in office. Mm-hmm. And that is the hardest part. I felt the same way when, you know, Shireen wasn't on Salt Lake County Council anymore. It was like we
lose. You felt unrepresented?
No, but I know
there's at large.
I was at
so
large.
You did represent him.
Yeah, oh, that's right. She did. I felt unrepresented. No, but it's like those people who are that do have a voice. They do have. It's sad when those qualified people have to like step away, and like now they're in the back burner for a little bit and trying to find other ways. Like
I'm
podcasts.
Always looking in election for an outcome that makes me feel more excited about the system, that it's working, that, you know, that the public is informed.
You're so weird.
Well, it's my transition to Derrick Brown.
I get it. Okay.
Because I was so happy to see he did well. Now, I don't know the other candidates well, but I think Derrick is a star. And I've been so happy to be a friend of his and know him. And I do believe he was on the ballot to serve, not to gain power as an individual, and I think he'll really help the AG's office, which I know you'll love.
Yes, I will love that. So I will say who knows if I'll be doing this in, I guess it would be 5 years from now, basically. But to come to the end of his term, if he is able to run our attorney general's office without controversy, without scandal, that will be a huge step forward for this state. Mm-hmm. I also really hope. I'm guessing he's not a listener, but maybe he is. I hope that we can move away from, I felt like in particular, a lot of frustration around stepping into, I felt like our current attorney general stepped into a lot of things that just didn't serve the people of Utah. Mm-hmm. And I understand if you want to sue the Biden administration over this and that, like I get that. But I think it's that kind of that next level that we were seeing from Reyes that, participation in Trump, like anyway, there. I just will be grateful to have somebody who seems more interested in serving the people than serving kind of this vision of himself.
Dan, bring us home on this one and then we'll take a break.
Derrick is a consummate professional, a good man who's honest, hardworking. He's all these things. And it was, when I was considering running for AG before he was in, we were just kind of back and forth on things. And when I saw that he's like, yeah, I really want to do this, it was easy for me to say, great, you're going to go do an awesome
you're
job.
You're just like me, meaning I believe in the system, you believe in him, and he got it.
Yeah, but I'm not looking for who's going to like make this. I don't think about it that way.
Hey, we will take a short break. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. We'll be right back.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner, I am in the political center, and we are talking elections post-primary, and we need to talk about Governor Cox and Phil Lyman. This is multifaceted, Dan and Shireen, because first there's the results, then there's the response to the results, and then there's like, what's next?
Yeah, yeah.
So let's just break those down. Dan, I mean, you got the website upside down. How did it end up?
Well, so far, we end up as, it's always a little bit premature. There's still votes to be counted, blah, blah, blah. Right now, it's 57% for Spencer Cox and 43% for Phil Lyman.
Okay, and I said it would be double digit.
Yes. Okay, so what do we think? Better, or is this what you anticipated? What are you thinking? What does this result look like to you?
Well, there's a bunch of things that you can kind of pull out of this. Mm-hmm. What you see is a governor who's popular. And if I remember right, those early numbers, this is right along the lines with those who thought Spencer Cox was doing a good job managing the state of Utah and those that didn't, right? Mm-hmm. Like it was pretty close to these numbers. Actually, I think the didn't was a little bit lower, but that being said, the undecideds have to fall somewhere.
Yep.
And I look at these numbers and there's like, well, I sure wish, for all intents and purposes, I wish the governor was a little bit higher, like a 20-point victory, I guess, would be different. But you look at these numbers and then you start to look down to the next layer and figure out where did the governor do well and where did he not do so well. And the one that always stands out to me is Washington County has always been like this predictable, you know, I went back, you can look back to conventions and elections previous, you know, Governor Herbert did well in Washington County, Governor Huntsman, Governor Leavitt, like go back. They just do well in Washington County. Not this time. And it was a real change when
I mean, Phil Lyman won.
Phil Lyman won Washington County. And so that's a pretty different story than we have in the past. And while the governor still won Utah County, you know, by a double-digit margin, Washington County going the other way says maybe Utah County isn't the bright red hotspot that it once was as much as Washington County is becoming that.
Shereen, give us your thoughts on the governor's race.
Well, I guess I would just maybe add a little bit of commentary on Washington County, because I spent some time knocking on doors there. And I do think Washington County has two things that are happening that Utah County was experiencing as well. But the shift in demographics and population there, an older population, I think a group of people that is, like when we think about COVID and the experience that our state was happening, having the reactions out of Washington County were much more extreme. So I do think that there is something happening that's been happening in, you know, over many years in Washington County. I guess I would say this. I struggle with this one because I have become a person who is quite skeptical about Spencer Cox. And I'm often considering that there was something that Phil Lyman offered, which was just telling you exactly what he thought. And I do think that that can be chaos. And I don't agree with his policies. But I find that policy wise, there's not a lot of space for me between Phil Lyman and Spencer Cox.
Okay.
And I just think that it comes with a smile with Spencer Cox. And I would love to understand, really, when we think about kind of some of the messaging that he's, some of the ways that he's, that Governor Cox has presented himself, I would just love to see that materialize into policy, into actually disagreeing better, into ways that we're treating each other with greater dignity.
I have a theory about this, and that is that I would have expected Lyman to take the MAGA vote, which I think of as 30 to 35% or something, but he gets 43. And I think the difference there is protest vote on Cox. That, you know, not MAGA, but protest vote on Cox, and possibly, Shereen, for what you're saying, that they think he feels one thing, but he does something else.
Something else.
Dan?
Well, I think people have to take the whole grand picture into perspective. The governor is hamstrung a lot of times by the legislature, and the legislature is hamstrung by the governor, right? Mm-hmm. They kind of hamstring each other, and then both are hamstrung.
Healthy tension.
Healthy tension. What I'd say is the governor in a lot of places is stuck with the policy that delivered that's delivered to him by the legislature despite what he says. And that's, I think, hard to do, at least in my opinion.
So, well, especially since the legislature is a reflection of the public and he wants to be reelected and he's not able to do any of the things he's feeling or believes, Shereen, if he's not there.
Okay, just I just want to again highlight
on elections, not policy.
Okay,
right?
Well, I just want to
election policy
highlight again that this is a governor who's trying to lead us into a space where we're disagreeing better. Puts out his pride proclamation that fully erases the words LGBT. In fact, actually, there isn't a pride proclamation. There was in a couple of years ago, and now this year it was a proclamation on understanding
bridge building.
Bridge building. Right. Yeah. So just like this is the kind of stuff that I just am so tired of, and maybe I'm just
it.
Out of it.
You get worn out on everything so quickly.
I know.
Dan,
on to
tell
the next
me,
thing.
What do you make of Lyman's comments about how he has not conceded yet and he's had, you know, starting pretty early a couple of weeks ago, questioning our election process, the signature gathering.
The signature gathering.
Yeah, the signatures. Yeah. What do you predict is going to happen next? Because I think Phil Lyman has every interest to just go be colorful and in some ways outrageous about our election system just because he can do it.
Well, and he'll have a platform on those issues for a little while. It always goes back to the age-old adage. Everything you don't understand is a conspiracy theory, right? Waiting to happen. And I think in this situation is if you don't dig in and understand how things work, then you eventually can easily find a conspiracy or a problem or whatever it may be. And I think in this situation, There's the protest vote that you mentioned over the governor.
Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, I think Shireen's husband may have been one of them, because she confessed on this program that he voted in the primary and he knew
Nick
exactly what he was
here.
Doing.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
So,
I just didn't want you to look.
I'm going to borrow from Shireen's hero, Kamala Harris, for a second and talk about Venn diagrams. But when you talk about the overlap between the protest vote against Governor Cox and those who are apt to accept conspiracy theories for truth. And I think that overlap is pretty high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's why I look at all those things. I'm not surprised that Phil will challenge and make some of those concerns. But it comes out of a lack of understanding on what those things are. And
I think it won't age well if he does that.
Yeah, but I don't think he's worried about it. I mean, if you look at the political cycle and how quickly things turn, I was discussing this the other day. There's so little accountability for most people.
Yeah. I watched Governor Cox as he did some media interviews last night, and he definitely made me proud in the sense that he is articulate. He's energetic. He's got, strong convictions that he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see him perform for four more years.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
So I want to, can I talk about a couple of Democrats?
Yes.
Okay. So we had Salt Lake County has an open seat, Jim Bradley, who has served for many years, actually from the time when Salt Lake County was a commission to now where we
stunning.
Have a stunning yeah. career, really just a phenomenal human with such an interesting story. Maybe we can get him
witty,
on one time.
A witty
guy. Oh, my
guy.
Goodness. Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Jim Bradley's retiring. It's an open seat. Democrats did advance two candidates out of county convention. Dustin Gettle, who is a city council member in Midvale, right? Midvale. And then also Natalie Pinckney in South Salt Lake. It looks like Natalie's going to win this. I just have to say, I was really proud for both of these candidates to be on the ballot, and I'm excited to see what they both continue to do.
Do you think they can get the general?
I do. I do. I think that it's, having been through this, it's a tough race countywide mm-hmm. At the county council level. A lot of people just aren't paying attention and don't know what that person does. But I think that there is some advantage to having the Republican candidate is a woman. Mm-hmm. And I do think there's a little bit of a preference for female leaders in this county.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having two women for that race is interesting. Also, Joel Briscoe, who has served with so much grace and, mm-hmm. and so much tenacity over the years.
14 years.
Is unseated in this primary by Grant Miller. Grant Miller brings a lot to the table. He is a public defender, a child of an immigrant. He has a lot of really, I think, important pieces of his own story that he's bringing to the table. But I just want to take a moment to acknowledge my gratitude for Joel Briscoe and his service.
For sure.
I'm with you.
For
yeah.
sure.
Love Joel.
Dan, tell us a few more of the state races. What were the highlights or things that you would mention?
So the race that was closest to me, Heidi Baldry, Emily Lockhart, and Garrett Kamens kind of fighting it out there with three for a sort of open, but not open, mm-hmm. like first time contested. And Heidi Baldry pulled it out. Like, she's been a citizen advocate in that district, that area for a long time, and pulled it out. And she's a very, conservative voice. Don Ipsen, the senator down in St. George, had a close convention race. I say this because he is the first candidate to declare the intent to gather signatures, not get the signatures, and survive convention.
Crazy, yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
Survives convention, then goes on to win it. Mike Peterson up in Cache Valley. The one that, people were watching too was Danielle Harding, former Davis County party chair, taking on an incumbent, Trevor Lee. And Trevor Lee pulled that out pretty solidly. So,
that one surprised me.
Yeah. And he pulled it out, but he worked really hard. There's a bunch of other races at the state house level that are really interesting that we can talk about later.
Yeah. Sounds good. Dan, just in the remaining minutes here, and if Shireen wants to add, caucus convention system, what did we learn in this route? I mean, it looked to me like in the governor's race that it flipped. What Lyman got in the convention, Cox got in the primary.
I hope that people will recognize what the caucus convention system really is becoming. It is literally becoming an everyman's access to the ballot, right? And it's, how does everyday Utahn get on the ballot? They're not going to go spend thousands of dollars, $10 per signature. They're not going to go out there and gather signatures for that cost because they don't going to spend mm-hmm. that personally.
Yeah, yeah.
So the convention becomes, are they good enough to go challenge?
It's the route for the person who's not well
well
funded.
Yep.
Yeah. And just one last point on that. It's also troubling to me that we would use it as a presidential preference poll. We should get back to a Super Tuesday primary.
Well, I think we all thought we would do that this year. It just, the party went a different route. I don't think it'll ever happen again.
I gotta love it. Well, it's been so fun being with you, Shireen and Dan. I'm Natalie Gochner. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.